League. Shiny Goons.
Touch 'em all, Joe.
Yeah, beauty.
It's only game.
Hello and welcome everyone to the show that gets people talking about something else. This is Big Shiny Goons, and it is episode. I am so unprepared because I have to scroll down. It is episode 24. I'm your host, and with me today, I'm your host Thomas. I should probably say my name too. And with me today is the co-host, Block Party PODcast, and Hockey Fight, and stand-up comedian, John Cullen. John, how's it going, man?
Hello, hello, Thomas. It is going well. I'm disappointed. I feel like the episode 24 is lost on me, a non-drinker.
Oh, there you go.
You screwed up. You know, you could have. It was the 2-4 joke was right there for someone who drinks, but unfortunately I don't. So I don't even know how to joke about it.
It's okay. This is an anti-joke podcast, so we're deadly serious.
Okay, yeah. Good. That's what I heard. That's what people have said. You know, lots of people are talking about it. People who have been on the show and your listeners say that it is a very serious thing. So I'm here. I'm ready to be serious, man. I don't like to tell jokes often anyway. So this is perfect.
Anyways, straight to the point. Dead serious. I do feel like I'm kind of cheating with you though, that you talk about sports and music kind of in two separate shows. So I'm kind of like towing the line of you're not talking about anything else. You're just talking in general.
Well, I mean, you did ask me about what album I wanted to talk about. And I specifically said I wouldn't do a nu metal album because on my music podcast, that is all I talk about. So this is kind of like, you know, this is different. This is something I haven't talked about on a podcast before. Pardon me, which is like surprising. That was one of those where I couldn't even stop it if I wanted to. It just came out of my throat. It was like, thanks a lot, body. Appreciate that. I've between like Real Good Show, my old podcast, Blocked Party, my current podcast, PODcast, Hockey Fight, I don't think I've ever talked about this album. So this is like new for me. But you are right in that this is cheating. And I do have podcasts about hockey.
I know. And it is funny. Like, so when I started the idea of the pod, and obviously like when you kind of start ideas where it's just you and a guest, you're kind of like doing a short list of guests and your name came to like, oh, like later down the road or whatever. And you actually mentioned, you like DM'd me immediately when I announced the name of the show. Because I'm going to get sued eventually.
Yes, you are going to get sued by a guy in my fantasy hockey pool who has the same name of his team as the name of this show, Big Shiny Goons. So, yeah. So, I mean, he's a lawyer. Well, I'm not saying one way or the other what's going on. I will say, though, that he is aware of the show.
Well, maybe he'll be on the show and then we can do that.
I don't think you want him on your show. He's a pretty shy guy. He's not, you know, I don't know that he would be the best guest. And he's also one of those guys I don't even know that he like loves music that much. Like he might. I don't actually know. We've never really talked music, but he seems like one of those guys who like I saw like you had, you know, when I was looking, because when you asked me what album I wanted to do, I like looked at what albums some of the past guests had done because I didn't want to, you know, kind of bark up the same tree, and I saw one of your past guests did Imagine Dragons, so like he could be that kind of guy who's like Imagine Dragons changed my
Maroon
life
5.
You know, or whatever, which is like Maroon 5, oh man, how good would that be? I mean, at least Maroon 5 have jams. Imagine Dragons is not like what are some other bands where if someone was just like, this is the band that changed my life, you like Three Doors Down,
that'd
be pretty bad. Something like that, Nickelback. I mean, this is a hockey podcast.
Like Nickelback has like some like Rockstar is still like slaps. I feel like they've like turned it around. I feel like maybe it's just like
people are coming back around on Nickelback. It's what's happening with nu metal now.
Right.
You know, like even in the time, like we've been doing the PODcast for almost exactly 2 years. And for those of you who haven't like filled in the gaps from what I've already said, it's a monthly podcast where me and my co-host Brian review a classic nu metal album. And I would say even in the 2 years we've been doing the podcast, I've sort of seen the like discourse around nu metal sort of shift a little bit, which has been interesting and fun to see. And I think Nickelback is getting there too. I mean, I always go back to a good friend of mine, comedian Adam Christie. His theory on Nickelback is that no one can say that they hate Nickelback because no one would go to a Nickelback show and have a bad time. Like he's like, if you went to Nickelback, you would love it. You'd have like the best night of your life. And I was like, maybe. He's like, no, you would. Everybody would. No one goes to a Nickelback show and they're like, wow, that stunk. Like that. He's like, that would just never happen. And I was like, you know what? He's probably right. Like, I don't think I would have a bad time at a Nickelback show, even though I never go out of my way to listen.
And like they're, I don't know if like, if it's just like the pop format that they kind of follow, but like similar bands like Buck Cherry or something, you could like, are like, I feel like are not that at all. Like, I think one of my good friends told me a story of he saw Kiss in Oshawa. So just like straight up Kiss in Oshawa.
Yeah, that's the place you want to see Kiss. If you're going to see, like, if you can't see Kiss in Detroit, go see him in Oshawa.
The GM plant, everything. Yeah. It's right there.
Exactly.
And Buck Cherry was opening for them, and it was pretty much dead silent except like one, I think he wanted to say like late 30s, early 40s mother with like a 9-year-old son, and she basically from like the bleachers, pretty much like the way, like third deck, was like flashing Buck Cherry. And it's like, yeah, that's like the show, that's Buck Cherry.
I love that. That rules. I'm pretty pro Buck Cherry because their lead singer Josh Todd did a very funny cameo for us. Because on Blocked Party we have like a bonus episode where we review like bad celebrity shoutouts from cameo.com, and we did one with Nick Cirelli and Bradford Evans, who were kind of like around the same time as us, were sort of like originators of like dicking around with Cameo and like making celebrities do stupid shit. So we came up with the idea of getting the lead singer of Buck Cherry to give the Birds and the Bees talk to our kid, because we said that I think the conceit was that we needed to have the Birds and the Bees talk with our kid, but he refused to do it, but he was like a huge Buck Cherry fan, so we wanted the lead singer of Buck Cherry to like maybe just encourage him a little bit and help us sort of like get the Birds and the Bees talk rolling. And he was like very earnest and like very, it was actually like a genuinely, like it didn't, the cameo almost didn't end up being funny. It was almost more just like heartwarming, because he actually gave like good advice. And he was like, yeah, you know, like you want to be sure, especially when you're a younger guy, that if you're going to have sex with someone, you don't want to be doing it like just for the sake of doing it. And you want to make sure that you have feelings for the girl. Make sure you get consent. You want to make sure that you respect her. Always wear a condom. Like, he was giving like legitimate, good, actual advice. And we were like, fuck, I guess Buck Cherry's good now. This is crazy. Oh, so I'm all in. I'm all in on Buck Cherry.
Well,
now,
yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not gonna go out of my way to listen to it, but if it's in front of me, I'll, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in 100%. It's just a general feeling. And if someone wants to come on the show and talk about Buck Cherry, more than willing.
I guess you don't really, I mean, that's the thing, you've kind of set yourself up where people might be bringing stuff onto the show where you like actively don't want to participate in the discussion or listen to it or whatever. Cause I guess like you would probably, if someone comes on and it's an album you don't know, I'm assuming you would listen to it before you brought them on the show. So
it's a little tough, but I generally, you kind of get to know, cause it's mainly people I follow on Twitter and stuff. And like, you kind of get to know, or I just assume that they're into some band or artist. Like, it's just general. Probably Marissa with Imagine Dragons is the closest, where I listened to that album. And even like, I had Julian McKenzie on from The Athletic, and he had Tame Impala. Yeah. And I've never listened to them except like Tame Impala or whatever. I've never listened to them. Like,
yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah. And like, I've recognized some songs just from like radio play and stuff, but it was like, okay, it's whatever. But again, like, it's not my expertise. So that kind of, I don't have a lot of input in those episodes.
But that's fine. You know, I mean, I think the one thing is like, even if you don't like music that much, like a really mainstream, like an Imagine Dragons or something is your favorite band or your sort of like formative album, I think music is something that people are always like happy to talk about. And it's often like tied to memories and stuff too. So it sort of just allows you to, yeah, like obviously I'm sure you'd prefer it to be an album that you had like a really close connection with also, or just some connection with. But at the same time, music is sort of the one thing where you can just kind of start someone up and let them go. And you don't have to worry too much about like, ooh, I got to overly host this or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not much of a host anyway, so it's fine. just like jumbled up like notes on a piece of paper that like I just, there's no flow at all. It's fine.
Oh man, it's up, dude. It's fine. I mean, I will say I'm sure you know Blake Murphy. He's a Raptors writer for The Athletic, and him and Jake Goldsby had a music podcast called Columbia House Party that is now on hiatus, and I don't know if it'll ever come back or not. But I remember, like, because obviously, yeah, I have a music podcast, and the preparation for the POD cast is usually, I'll listen to the album like two or three times. I will read like the Wikipedia, and then I will also, usually on the show, Brian and I will review like articles from the time period. So we try to find like, okay, Follow the Leader came out. What were like five interviews that Korn did like at that time? Like what was going through their mind? What was their sort of ethos at the time? And we talk about those on the show, but that's sort of like the extent of the research. And we don't plan out at all what we're going to talk about or where the discussion goes. And I remember the first time I guested on Columbia House Party, Blake, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're a fan of Blake and you read his work, I mean, he's just like the most thorough guy. His understanding of the NBA collective bargaining agreement is like, I'm surprised an NBA front office hasn't hired him. Like, he's just, his work ethic is unbelievable. When the Raptors had their run to the championship, he was doing two gamers for every game. So he would do a gamer the night of, and then he would wake up the next morning, rewatch the game, and then write another full gamer based on rewatching the game. It was like, the guy's insane. So anyway, I'm doing Columbia House Party, and he sends me a Word doc, and I shit you not, it was five pages long for one episode. And I was like, oh my God, am I the worst podcaster on earth? Like, what's happening? But that's just the way he is. He told, because I said to him, I'm like, this is crazy. And he was like, this is just the way that I prefer to work. Like, I like to be hyper organized and hyper prepared. And I'm sort of like the opposite of that. But I think, I guess my point is, I think you can have a good podcast either way. Right. You can have a good podcast having the most insane prep, but then also having like very little prep.
Yeah. And like you appeared on my hockey, like straight up general hockey podcast, Hosers. Yes. And that's like, I prep even more for this than that one, where that one's like, hit record. What are we talking about? Like, look at NHL.com/news and just like bullshit about whatever and just like spout off opinions without any research or whatever. But
well, that one though too, you have three hosts, right? Easy. So that also helps, right? When you got three guys already on the show and then you're maybe bringing on a guest too, it's like, you're never going to be hurting for things to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of things to talk about, thank you.
Good segue.
Were you always like into like dual running kind of sports and music, like throughout childhood, adolescence and stuff, just kind of like both interests? Cause like you played hockey growing up, right? I think we talked about that before.
Yes.
And all of that stuff. So like, was it kind of a balancing act ever you fought?
Well, I mean, the first CD that I ever got was Jock Jams Volume 2. So I don't know if that tells you much about my intersection of like, I was genuinely like, I would say that I was into stadium music in the same way that like a different kid might be into like Disney songs. Like, to me, those are like the songs I knew. I mean, growing up, like my dad had like fairly, I would say, good musical taste, but just like what you would expect, like a suburban Ontario dad to listen to, you know, Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin and, you know, stuff like that. He was into the sort of hard rock kind of thing. So we, you know, I always listened to like pretty good music when I was younger, I would say. But as far as like developing my own taste, I was so obsessed with hockey when I was a kid, like so obsessed. And I mean, I still am obviously very into hockey, but when I was a kid, I mean, it was just, I loved it all. I loved playing. I loved the stats. I loved the NHL. I loved junior hockey. My dad and I used to go to junior A games all the time when I was a kid. Like, so for me, like, I remember getting jock jams and that just being like the coolest thing on earth, because it was like, holy shit, like I was getting, you know, these songs that I would hear in the rink that would get me fired up for games. It was like, I could have this at home. Like it seemed almost like, you know, you're a kid, you don't know any, like it was almost felt to me like stadium DJs were the only people who had access to this music before now, which in like a weird way is kind of true. I mean, the internet wasn't around. You couldn't just burn your own CDs. So like to get all 17 of those songs on one album was crazy. And then shortly after that, Hockey Night in Canada also put out like their sort of version of jock jams, and I remember it had the Hockey Night in Canada theme on the CD, and it was the full version of the theme, like it was like 4 minutes long. And so just like having that, so like me and my friends, if we were playing hockey in our basement or outside or whatever, could have a boombox with the Hockey Night in Canada theme playing. It was like just crazy. So yeah, for me, they've always been tied together. I mean, obviously I sort of got out of that. I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, exclusively listening to stadium music anymore. But yeah, it was something that was always very tied for me. And like even, you know, the Rock'em Sock'em videos too, of course, I loved those. And so yeah, there was definitely like a close tie, I would say, between those two things for me. And just like, I was just a big music fan. So whatever music was soundtracking the things I liked, chances are pretty good I was going
to
be into.
And was it ever like, so when you're getting to like new metal specifically, maybe, like what was your sporting involvement then? Like, were you still playing hockey and everything? Like kind of that still tied together and everything?
Yeah. So I was still playing hockey. I quit hockey when I was 14. And so Korn's Follow the Leader came out when I was 13, which was when I sort of got into new metal. Like Freak on a Leash was basically like the song that sort of broke me into new metal. And then after that, I was just that was all I listened to from like 1998 to 2001, basically. I don't know. I wouldn't say that I necessarily connected new metal with sports. I think that is actually when, I mean, I guess a little before, like the album we're going to be talking about today would have also been around the time when I was playing hockey very seriously. And I don't think I would have connected that album to hockey either. So I did have some bands I listened to that weren't like jock jams-ish bands, but so I would say those parts of it were separate. But I mean, you know, again, I can see the appeal of listening to new metal and you know, getting hyped up for a sports game. But I quit hockey to curl, so that's a very different sport altogether. And it was really funny because I can remember, like, you know, I started curling when I was 13 as well. And then I started to get really serious into it when I was in my like 15, 16, and then onwards. And so when I first started curling, there wasn't really like, you know, you weren't going to bring a Discman to the rink to like warm up or whatever. But then once like iPods and iPhones and stuff started being a thing, you would start to see like curlers would be listening to music before games to warm up. And obviously, like, you still see that now today. And I actually couldn't get into it because basically like the music I like to get me hyped up is like new metal or just like heavier music in general. And so then it's like you listen to that for like 30 minutes before a curling game, and then you get out there and you know it's the slowest game on earth. So it's like, you know, I was like getting all jacked up, I'd have all this energy, and then it was sort of like, okay, now I need to completely calm my mind and my body in order to play this sport properly. So I was actually never a big like pregame music listener for that reason, because there just isn't, for me anyway, I have a really hard time connecting music to curling in that
way. Yeah, like you needed like Brian Eno music for airports or something.
Yes, totally. I remember actually like thinking about it, and I started listening to Fleet Foxes before games. But then even then I was just like, nah, I'd rather just like talk to my team or whoever else is. No one on my team was really like a big pregame music person. So we ended up just mostly talking to each other and getting ready for the game that way. But yeah, I mean, I think most curlers honestly are like small town Canadian people. So they're just probably listening to like country or just, you know, something that's pretty generic and like isn't getting them like, you know, absolutely ready to go in the same way that I was like listening, trying to listen to like Under Oath and then Go Curl. Yeah. You know, it wasn't exactly
just a bunch
of
like hip and Sam Roberts band and like,
yes, totally. And that fits the vibe, but I didn't even in hockey too. Like I played on some teams where guys would bring, you know, bring a boom box into the dressing room or whatever. And I actually never liked it. I never liked having music in the locker room. To me, I liked getting ready for the game in silence. Like, I don't know why, but I just feel like there's something about, or just like, you know, obviously like chatting to the guys on your team or whatever. But for me, I think my ideal performance state is near silence before anything.
Yeah. It's just stoic. And I only asked this because like, it was kind of the opposite for me, where I was involved in music. I participated in music more, like kind of growing up through high school. I wanted to do that professionally, went to school to study it, do all that extra. I have a degree somewhere. And then like, I would like watch hockey and soccer and everything. But I felt that maybe it was like, just how I am and like being so into something where like everything else doesn't matter, that like my sports fandom just like completely waned. Like it was just like gone pretty much. Like I had a huge gap where I like, if you ask me who was on the Leafs in like 2012 to 2016, I like, it's a big just gap, I feel. Like
it, oh, yeah. Interesting. Oh yeah. See, I don't think so, but you were in like a touring band, right? Like you were having success.
Yeah,
in music,
I was in like
correct?
High school. I was in a hardcore band that would play around Ontario. And then, I studied jazz at university, and then I'd play like gigs and stuff and everything. So it was like a full on.
I think I just, like, I mean, I think like that makes sense to me. I think I just never, like I was in bands too in university. I played in what I would describe as a dramatic indie band, is like a good way of, you know, like an Explosions in the Sky thing. And that, yeah. So did that for a while. And similar, you know, we played around BC and stuff like that. And, you know, never huge or anything. And then I played in a lesbian folk band, which I always say was, you know, what we had in common was we all liked women. So that was like
indigo
good,
period.
You know, it was a good, yes, exactly. My Lilith Fair period. And it was really, really fun. I mean, we were just like a party band and it was a great time. But so that was in my, I would say like 19 to 22, 23. But I don't think I ever really got away from sports, because I don't think music was never all consuming for me in that way. And I also think the whole time I was in bands, I was curling at like a near professional level. So I was always like pretty connected to sports in that way. So I don't think that I ever really got away from sports because of music, but I can also totally see how that would do it. And I think too, like if you're, in a program for it, or you're playing in a band that's touring or whatever, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to keep up with what's going on in the games and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, and honestly, like I wish I didn't know anything about the Leafs from 2012 to 2016. That would actually be a blessing if that could happen. I mean, really, if we could go all the way back to 05. Yeah. I mean, I think once Jeremy Roenick scored that overtime goal in the second round of the playoffs in 04, I think, if I could have just stopped watching from then until when we drafted Austin Matthews, that probably would have been very healthy for me.
Yeah, so that's probably ideal. All I remember is I think – so I was in high school during the Vancouver-Boston series and really...
Okay. Oh, you're way younger
than me. I'm 27. I'm 27. I turned 27.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I feel like you and I are very close in age. I'm going to be 36 in October.
I just look old.
No, you don't even. No, you don't look old. I just think for whatever reason.
Yeah, like the Hosers guy, like Carter and Chris, who I do that other podcast with, they're closer to your age, like early 30s.
Okay, maybe maybe that's
association.
Why
right. I'm basically their little brother. That's what they want. So I just remember cheering for the Bruins in 2011 because obviously I was a hardcore kid, so I wanted Lucic to punch everyone in the face kind of thing. Troubled, violent kid. Anyways,
I think too, but also too, I think it also probably lines up with your age. Definitely when I was in university, I watched the Leafs way less.
Right,
you're not going to prioritize watching a Leafs game on a Saturday night when you could be out with your friends or whatever. And I was also away at curling tournaments a lot. And so I mean, I was definitely still connected to the team and I knew everything that was going on and just hockey in general. But I think that, again, that was definitely probably the similar age that you were when you were sort of missing out on that stuff would have been about the same for me when I was sort of 19 to 24, 25. You know, and also too, I started my career early. I started teaching when I was 23, so kind of getting my career off the ground and doing all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, you just, it drifts a little further away. And then now that I'm older, I'm just on a Saturday night, I'm if I can just stay home and watch the Leafs game, that's a pretty good Saturday for me. I'm and also I'm in Vancouver, so the Leafs are on at 4. So that also helps a lot. The Leafs are on at 4. You watch the Leafs game, you sort of make and eat dinner in the third period, and then the game's over by 7, and then you go do whatever you need to do. But yeah, on a weeknight now, if I can come home from work and watch the Leafs game, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I distinctly, maybe it was a little earlier than 2016. I want to say maybe it was 2014 or something, but I remember playing a jazz gig at this bar, whatever, downtown Toronto, but we were facing the TV. So it was a very terrible for me because I have terrible attention span. But then the McDavid draft lottery was playing. So I was playing literally during a set. The McDavid draft lottery is playing, and that was when the Leafs could have, and I was a big Leafs fan at the point.
Yes.
At that point, and it was just playing, and then I audibly not yelled or anything, but I was what the fuck? Just as soon as it happened. And it was oh, I'm just alone just watching this. No one else is paying attention to this, but yeah. It was so funny.
That would be my nightmare. If I was doing comedy and there was something big happening with the Leafs across from me, that wouldn't go well. I do remember watching the Austin Matthews draft lottery in a Yuck Yucks before I went up on stage. So because it was at the Halifax Comedy Festival, and I was getting ready. I think I had a TV set the next day, so they give you sort of a warm-up set the day before. And I remember I was fairly late on the lineup and the draft lottery was, and I was watching it in the back of the Halifax Yuck Yucks on my phone. And I remember them, the Leafs winning the draft lottery. And I was just super pumped. And then 5 minutes later I had to go on stage, and Halifax has a lot of Leafs fans. So I think I think I ended up spending the first 2 minutes of my set, not even telling jokes, just being we're going to draft Austin Matthews. Yes. Just being so excited. Yeah. These kinds of things happen in life, but it would be terrible if I'm the same as you. If it was across from me, it wouldn't be
Yeah, wouldn't be it was good. Bad. Anyways, let's move on to the first segment, which is terrible to say because it's the first segment. So
okay, 29 no, minutes perfect. In, segment one.
I'm a podcaster. John, could you tell the audience what you're listening to lately? Whether it doesn't have to be a new release, it could just be anything that you're checking out recently that's new to you or just an old favorite.
Well, honestly, one of my favorite albums this year so far is the EP that Willow Smith okay. put out very randomly. She just, it's like, it's got some like nu metal mm-hmm. in it. It's got some pop punk in it. Like Travis Barker produced it and he plays drums on three of the songs, I think. And she also does a song with Avril Lavigne. And it's just really good. I don't know. That's like one of the albums I've been listening to the most this year. I think it's called, let me look. It's got like a stupid name. That's why I can't remember.
I know the single is like Transparent Soul. Is that
Transparent Soul, EP? Which is an unbelievable yeah. song. Yeah, that's on the EP. That song is incredible. It's called Lately I Feel Everything, and everything is in all caps. That's why I knew it. So yeah, like I'm 36. I can't yeah. say that album title out loud. I have to be like, oh, it's the yeah. Willow. Yeah. It's the Willow Smith album. But yeah, like truly I've been loving it. I mean, that's been really, really good. Like this year, there actually hasn't been, in my opinion, there hasn't been that many great albums this year so far. So that's one of the ones that I've been really digging a lot. Oh, and then another really good one that I've listened to a lot this year that I like quite a bit. It's from last year, but it's a band called Mama. Okay. And the album is called Two of Me. And it was a weird one. I had sent a recommendation to a friend for a different band. I don't even remember what band. And he was like, oh, yeah, this sounds good. And then he sent me. He was like, oh, yeah, I played the thing you sent me on Spotify. And then this track came on next as like a recommended if you like. And it's really good. So he sent me back the single from the Mama album. And I was like, oh, that's really good. And so I've been listening to that a ton, even though it was from last year, that I've been loving that one too. It's kind of like, do you know the band Dive?
No.
D-I-I-V.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't know how that was pronounced.
I'm pretty sure it's Dive. I mean, I might be wrong too. Yeah, exactly. It kind of sounds like them if they were like a little bit poppier and fronted by a woman. But it's very good. I've been digging it a lot. It's like kind of like low key, lo-fi, but very solid. So I would say those are like the two this year that I've listened to the most. There's been some other good stuff. The new Deaf Heaven is pretty good. I've been enjoying putting that on in the background. I haven't had enough listens really to recommend it yet, but the Indigo D'Souza album that just came out on Friday is good. And Turnstile, the Turnstile record that came out on Friday is excellent. You know, I mean, I think like the thing I love about something like the Turnstile album is like, I'm too old. I'm not interested in listening to like a new hardcore band. That's just not going to happen for me. And I'm also not I was never a huge hardcore fan. I was more of a screamo guy. Once it started to get a little into hardcore, I was never like the biggest hardcore fan. So like this Turnstile album is basically, I think, exactly for me. Like it's like a hardcore band that's kind of trying to soften the edges a little bit. I'm like, this is exactly in my wheelhouse. Every hardcore band should just start doing this instead.
So I recorded, this is a peek behind the curtain. I'm breaking kayfabe here. But I'm pre-recording a lot of these episodes this week just because I have like a mountain of time. So I recorded with Mike Fail.
Big Bad
we,
Mike.
We talked about the Turnstile album and stuff, and
Mike's a big hardcore guy, you know. So I think I love Mike, and I know he'll listen to this, but I hope he listens to this, but I do think one of the funnier bits this year is Mike like talking about how the Armed album is like life-changing and like the best album that he's ever heard in his life, and he sings on it. or screams on it.
All just supported that.
Exactly. I love it. It's so good. You know, it's great. But I love Mike. Mm-hmm. He's an awesome guy. He he came out to see me do comedy when I was in Alberta, and we've known each other for a long time. He's a great guy. What was his formative record?
His was Watch Out by Alex on Fire. I think you might have given that as an option.
I pitched. Yes, I did. I did. And I felt like you didn't want to do it. No. So I was like, okay.
You chose, but like I was DMing a bunch of people at the same time. So it was like really bad if someone chose the same. But yeah, I think I don't know. Who
I mean, Watch first, Out but, is yeah. What a record. I mean, no, that's great. I will absolutely listen to that episode. I'd love to hear Mike talk about Watch Out.
Yeah. And yeah, we were talking a lot about how like Turnstile kind of, again, like coming from the hardcore perspective and like being, it's not so like straight up, like kind of their old stuff. And even their old stuff wasn't so straight up like that, but they really moved into that kind of like wanting to just, for like lack of a better word, like pop it up kind of thing. And I've even noticed like other bands, like there's one band that I've been listening to a lot, and I mentioned it on the episode with Mike, was Fury. And they're like a West Coast hardcore band, but they still like, I wouldn't even say it's very hardcore in the sense of like straight, like stage dives and everything, but they still play with those bands, but it's very like hard rock kind of thing. Yeah. Like it's good. And I would highly recommend them. And like, yeah, like during one of the songs, they like read a poem as a full thing, and it's nice. And it's a little, and then they like transition.
That's good.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah.
Yeah, people are like getting mad at Def Heaven for the same thing because they've gone to like clean vocals on this new record and it's a lot more shoegazy. I think I like the Def Heaven record. To me, it just sounds it sounds very much like its influences. Like it sounds like you're just listening to like a slow dive record or a Hum record. Like it's not, to me, I was not a fan of Def Heaven, of their previous stuff, because it was too screamy and heavy for me. But I can understand why a fan of them would be really mad, because they're not only not doing the thing that they're unique and very good at, but they're kind of doing not a very original version of shoegaze, mm-hmm. at least in my opinion. I think it's good. Like I like to listen to it. It sounds like a heavier American football, and I love American football and I love heavy music. So that's all good to me. But like, to me, like I would rather a band do what Turnstile is doing, where, like you say, they're sort of popping it up, but it's still very much like a hardcore mm-hmm. sound. There's a lot of riffs in it. There's a lot of like, I can understand how, like, I guess what I would say is if you were a fan of their older stuff, I don't think their newer stuff would be as alienating as potentially some other bands who try to make that turn. Cause I still think there's a lot of stuff, going on there that you would pick out and enjoy. But yeah, for me, like I said, in my advanced age, what they're doing is, it's exactly what I want. You know, I've reached this point, and I think like listening to the record that we're going to talk about shortly today reminded me of just, you know, I think I went through like a long phase where I was just so obsessed with music and everything was about the album for me, where it was just like, I love this whole album front to back and I want to listen to every album front to back and that's how I want to consume things and blah, blah, blah. And now that I'm older, I'm just like, man, give me your two best songs and I'm good. You know, when I see a record and it's like 57 minutes long, I'm like, who's got the time?
That's why hardcore records are so good. They're like half hour max.
So good. So good. I worked out today and the Turnstile record was over before my workout was over. I was like, this rocks. So yeah, it's definitely something that I do appreciate in my, you know, in my older my older age now, because I just don't seek out music as much anymore. And I think it's just because a lot of times I do listen to something new and I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, it's like, I already listened to six bands who do this and it's better than this. So whereas, you know, when I was 20, I just wanted to listen to as many different things as possible. So it was like, oh, cool, I'll take a seventh version of Feist or whatever. You know, whereas like now I'm just like, oh, this just sounds like Feist and I could just listen to Feist instead of this. You know, so I think it's you start to like lose your capacity for discovering new bands. It's got to be something like really different or special for me to like really want to go back to it. And also not paying for it, I think, makes a big difference. Yeah. Or like, you know, I have my Apple Music subscription or whatever, but it's way different than when I was going to university, you know, and spending $20 on a CD. Like I was, that thing was going to get play because I was going to try. If I didn't love it, I was going to try really hard to love it because I paid for it. Whereas now, you know, yeah, you just kind of download something off Apple Music. If the first few songs are not that great, then you're just like, ah, yeah, whatever, I'm gone. I'm done. I did that with a band called Wednesday recently. There's a, where they like, I saw the single on a blog. I was like, man, this single's really good. I'm definitely going to download that album the day it comes out. Downloaded it, listened to the first five songs. I'm like, oh, the single's the only good song. Immediately deleted it from my catalog. I don't got time for this shit.
Yeah, and that's like that's why the like Spotify, like similar artist kind of thing works so much. Like you're saying with the Mama, like discovery, where like you find, you like basically, oh, I really like this artist, and like scroll down and like scroll through some artists, listen to a couple songs, and like with that, you know what you like. You, there's certain characteristics of bands that are just like grab you and tart, and like you just really go for. So if that's not within the first like couple of songs, you're like, okay, like I don't like one band that I like, I feel like I should like just because of the other bands I like is Knocked Loose, but the vocals I just can't handle. It's like very like high pitched, like screaming vocals. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. Like, so it's just like that kind of attitude of it, but what can you do?
What can you do?
Yeah.
You know, that's music.
Exactly. And speaking of music, another segue for you. There you go. Speaking of music, good. That'll be my, all my segues.
Yeah. Speaking of other stuff, speaking of music,
Let's talk about the record. Why you're here on the show. John, could you tell the lovely audience, if they haven't read the title of this, episode, what album you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm gonna be talking about Dookie by Green Day.
That's perfect. What was your, so go like tell us about your first experiences with the record. Like, do you remember your kind of your first listen at all?
Man, so I was thinking about this today because, yeah, I listened to the record again today. I drove out to my parents' place. They live about 40 minutes outside Vancouver. So I was like listening to it and I was trying to remember because there were three records that I listened to like all around the same time when I was so Dookie came out when I was 9. And there were three records I sort of listened to all around the same time. And that was Dookie, the Blue Album by Weezer, and Dude Ranch by Blink-182. And those are kind of all, and Dude Ranch I think is 1996, so it was like a little bit later, but like those were sort of the three like main records I listened to when I was a kid. And I can very specifically remember how I came across Weezer. I can very specifically, which it was the Buddy Holly video, because it's like iconic videos on Much Music all the time. So that was Weezer. I can very distinctly remember getting into Dude Ranch because it was a kid at my school who got it. And the CD art was the chamber of a gun. So it was like very like, whoa, okay, that looks cool. Like, what is that? And then it was like, oh, it's this band Blink-182. And then it was like, and then I really liked it. And Dookie, I honestly don't remember. Like, I feel like it was certainly Much Music because that's just how I discovered most of my music when I was younger. There was actually two ways I discovered music when I was younger. The first was Much Music. The second was City TV used to do a Sunday countdown. Oh, and I don't know. And I don't remember, like, I think it was in partnership with a radio station in Toronto. I don't remember what radio station it was, but I think it was like, it was for 1 hour on Sunday. They would just play music videos in a 1 hour block and they would count down the top 30. So they would just be like, oh, you know, 30, 29, 28, 27, and here's this week's number 26. And then they'd play the video for number 26. And then they'd come back from the video. And so it was just like, I think it was based on things that were new to the top 30. They'd play those. Maybe things that were sort of on their way out of the top 30. So they're like, oh, here's one last chance to see this or whatever. So that was how I sort of discovered all my music. I know for sure Green Day wouldn't have been on the Sunday countdown because it was very much like more of a pop kind of, you know, that's where I sort of discovered like Oasis and, you know, bands. It was more stuff like that, more pop leaning, a lot of the one hit wonders of the 90s. So Green Day, and again, I wish I could remember whether it was Basket Case or When I Come Around. It was one of those two songs that I probably would have heard on Much Music. And I feel quite sure it was When I Come Around because I remember thinking like Green Day were just so cool. You know, like they were just, they looked so cool in that video. They're sort of just like walking around. There's like a scene where they're walking past. I remember very vividly. I mean, I've seen the video probably 100 times now, but there's one part where they're walking down the hallway of a building. I don't know. It feels like a public-y type, like a hospital or a school or something like that. And they're walking down the hallway three wide. And I believe it's Mike Dirnt, the bassist. There's just a payphone and they're walking by it and he just picks up the phone off the receiver and then just like drops it. Like, so it's just hanging from the payphone.
So cool.
And I remember thinking like, what a fucking cool guy. Just walks by a payphone and unhooks the receiver just because, you know. And they just looked so cool. They had cool haircuts and cool clothes. And it was just, I loved their vibe. So I think that was sort of how I got into Green Day. And there were obviously like guys at my school who got into it as well. And I can like vividly remember like sitting in my room. I had like a little boom box and I can remember like sitting in my room and listening to Dookie when I was like, probably 10 years old. And it was just like, I just thought Green Day were really cool. I thought the songs were really good. And I think like all three of those records I've always liked. I've never like gone away from liking them. Like I think, so I went from those three records into nu metal. So then it was like, when you listen to nu metal, you didn't listen to anything else. It was like a cred thing. You know, it was like, I listened to Korn, I listened to Limp Bizkit, I listened to, you know, other bands in that orbit. And you didn't listen to anything else. So I never thought Green Day or Weezer or those bands were uncool. It's like Nimrod came out in 97, I think, and that's like such a good album as well. Like Green Day around that time, I guess Minority wasn't really that good, but you know, they didn't really release a bad record. Or sorry, Warning. Minority was the single. But I always liked Green Day. I never went away from liking them, even when I liked nu metal. Whereas with nu metal, after nu metal was over, I definitely went through like a long period of like, I don't like Korn. I don't like Limp Bizkit. Because I started to get into screamo. And you couldn't really, you know, the emo scene is a little bit, you know, more intense. You can't really tell people in the emo scene that you like Korn. Like that's like about the lamest thing on earth that you could do. So I definitely went through like a long period where I didn't even listen to nu metal hardly. And then I sort of came back to it as I got older. Whereas like these three records, and maybe Dookie in particular, I've just never got tired of. I mean, it's just such a good record. And even listening to it today, I'm like, man, like what a fun record. What a fun listen. It's so good.
And like, did you, so before today, listen to it, like, is it in your rotation still? Like, do you sometimes return to it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, with Green Day too, they're Green Day was also just like a very singlesy band too. So like their first greatest hits collection is called International Super Hits. And it covers basically their first album. I think Kerplunk was their first one. I can't remember if it's 1001 Smooth Out Slappy Hours or Kerplunk, but it's one of those two is the first one. So International Super Hits covers from those early records up to Warning. If I'm going to listen to Green Day, I will usually listen to that. Just it's got all the singles on it that you could like. I mean, if you think about it too, like Green Day's run from like Dookie, Insomniac, Nimrod, Warning, the singles run they went on is like absurd. I mean, if you think about all the songs, they're just like iconic songs from like those three albums. It's so good. So I think if I reach for a Green Day record, I'll go for that. But Dookie has songs on it that are not on the greatest hits record, like She and Having a Blast and Emenia Sleepis, mm-hmm. That I really like, and FOD that I really like and I want to listen to. So sometimes I'll go back to Dookie itself. But yeah, I mean, I've never really stopped listening to Green Day. I mean, I even liked American Idiot when it came out. I haven't listened to American Idiot in, you know, 20 years, but or whatever, it's been 15 years. But I remember when American Idiot first came out, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I had the CD. I thought it was great. I saw Green Day on the American Idiot tour. That remains to this day the only time I've seen them. That was a blast. So I would say since American Idiot, I have not been interested in anything new that Green Day has done, but they've never turned me off of, it's never turned me off of the old stuff.
Like looking today at like their discography, I had no idea about their albums after American Idiot, honestly.
I was like, if you had to like name, I think there's one like, one has like 21st century, and I want to say it's like 21st century breakdown or something like that. Yeah. And then was there one called Know Your Enemy, or was that just the name of
the single? I'm looking at it right now.
Because that song is just piss. Do you know your enemy? Do you know your enemy? It's so such a bad song.
Yeah, now I'm remembering it. And then they had a trilogy in 2012, Uno, Dos, Tres.
Oh God!
And I don't know if they just wanted to do like a pun, because each, like, Uno has Billy Joel, and then Dos has like Mike on the cover, and then Trey has Trey. And I don't know if that was like they literally wrote three albums just to have that.
It wouldn't surprise knowing Green Day, that's like not out of the realm of possibility, you know? So that's I just one thing I do remember is they came out with a Green Day Rock Band, and Green Day Rock Band came out, I think I want to say it was around the same time as whatever album Know Your Enemy is on. Is it on 21st Century Breakdown, or is it a different one?
Probably. No.
I can't remember.
Why is there so many? Yeah, it is.
Okay. So Green Day Rock Band came out. So I remember I bought it in like a bargain bin. Like I think I got it for like $8 or something. So I was just like, oh, it's Green Day Rock Band. But it came out at the same time, or like around the same time as 21st Century Breakdown. And so it has all of 21st Century Breakdown on it. And like it's missing a bunch of the classics, so that they could put all of 20. Like, it's still good. I mean, it still has obviously a lot of the classic Green Day songs, but it was just like, again, it's like, what was the decision making here where you're like, oh, we got to put all of 20. I know what the decision making was. They were trying to sell copies. I mean, you know, one of my favorite music facts is that Guitar Hero Aerosmith is technically like their best selling album or whatever. Like, it sold more than any other Aerosmith album. So they were probably thinking like, okay, well, people might not buy 21st Century Breakdown, but if they buy Rock Band, it's like kind hear of the like songs, them buying it. Yeah, exactly. But I just remember that being like, and I think I could, and again, someone might be listening to this and I might be totally wrong because I haven't played it in however many years, but I want to say that like the final level or whatever is of the game, if you're playing the career mode, is that you play it all. You play the whole thing. That's your like final set. It's like 40 minutes of just, here's this new album. That's your like final level.
My God.
Your final set list to conquer is all of 21st. So what I'm saying is no one's ever beaten Rock Band Green Day. Because they're like, I'm not going to sit here for 45 minutes and play these songs beat this game. Yeah, it's just, it's truly bad. It's funny, though, because I don't think of it as, like, legacy tarnishing. Like, I think that there are some bands where their late career output is so bad that you have a hard time going back to their other stuff. And for some reason with Green Day, I don't feel that way. And I think it's because it feels earnest to me. Like, I do think that they're genuinely making the music they want to make. I don't think that they're trying. I don't think they're being cynical about it, I guess, is what I would say. I don't like any of it, but it doesn't come across to me as them, like, just really trying to, you know, make money or whatever the case. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but that I guess that's sort of my lean, because it's, yeah, even though I don't listen to any of it, it doesn't ruin my enjoyment of the old stuff in the
least. And like even their most recent stuff, so I've never heard of this album. Apparently it came out last year.
Yes, I knew they did an album last year.
Father,
what's it called?
All Motherfuckers.
Yes, that's right. I knew it had a stupid ass.
So it was their last album with Reprise, because they like fulfilled their contract kind of thing, but still, like, Billy Joel wrote all the songs, still like sort of old timey rock and roll record. That's what Billy Joel said about it, kind of like experience, like inspired by T-Rex and Mott the Hoople and stuff like that. Like, it's still like whatever. Sure. They just like playing around stuff, but I do feel like it's almost like they're two separate bands, maybe even three, but it's like, yes, their first stuff, and then it clearly took like a huge pivot with American Idiot, and then maybe like you could tie 21st Century Breakdown somewhat with that, and then I feel like their new stuff where it's just like totally forgettable, I feel like. But
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of fans would argue that the first pivot was Dookie. Like,
that's fair. Yeah,
hardcore fans of Green Day hated Dookie. Like, they thought, like, there's the famous story of the club in San Francisco that they sort of like put on the map, and then once Dookie came out, they wouldn't let them play there anymore
because they signed,
because they sold out. Yeah, because they signed and they put out this sort of poppy. But I mean, if you listen to Kerplunk, it sounds like, like, you can very clearly draw a straight line from that to Dookie. It's not like they were fucking Black Flag and then made Dookie. Like, you know, it's literally just because they signed to a major that people are just like, oh, this is poppy now. It's like, this is, they were just doing this the whole time. But I do think, yeah, people have a very clear, I think, divide between that era. Like, to me, I would say, I would agree that they have three eras, but to me, it's the pre-Dookie era, the post-Dookie era, and then the post-American Idiot era. And I would lump American Idiot in there with I would say American Idiot belongs to this current era. But I can see how people who liked Green Day before that would still like American Idiot. Like, I bet if I turned on American Idiot right now, I would think it was fine. Mm. You know, it's, there's some catchy tunes on there and whatever, but, you know, I'm sure I won't love it. That's for certain. I'm certain I won't love it.
Yeah. Like, still, like, I think Boulevard of Broken Dreams came on the other day just randomly. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
They're fine. It's a fine song.
It's like
song.
A time capsule of like beginning of the Iraq War. Like,
yes, exactly. Wake Me Up When September Ends, Holiday. These are all like fine songs. No one's unhappy. And Jimmy of Suburbia, that's the like 9 minute like opening track, it's got some verve to it as well. But yeah, I mean, I think once Green Day was like, hey, let's turn this into an opera, you're sort of like, okay, well, you know, what are we doing here? I think it's over for us now. So, but yeah, I mean, it was just Dookie.
Does it ruin it at all, like, of their old stuff, like with some bands?
Not to me, but it might be just that I'm like, it's so tied to a time period for me, maybe, that I can always sort of get by it. But yeah, I mean, I just think, I think the songs are just really, really good. Like, the songs are really good. Like, even listening to it today, like, it doesn't even feel like an album that was made in 1994. Like, it's like the production is so good. It's very snappy. The songs are so snappy and sharp and well written, and there's like three songs on it that weren't singles that could have easily been singles. All the singles still go in. They're all still great. It's just a really, really, really good album. So I think like things like that are just always gonna stand the test of time, you know. I mean, Like I you know, it's almost, they're almost on a similar trajectory to U2. I mean, U2 started a little earlier, but I sort of view it the same way, where it's like, you just, no one in their right mind would think that like Boy and October and War and the Joshua Tree and the Unforgettable Fire are bad records. They're just not. They're just so good. It just doesn't matter. They're unassailable. It just doesn't matter what they did after. It doesn't matter that they put an album on your iPhone without your permission, or that they haven't written a good song since 2003 or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter, because the albums are just so good and so timeless. And I think Dookie actually has some of those same qualities. I mean, Green Day's not as transcendent of a band as U2, but close, you know. And I think, yeah, it's impossible to say that, you know, that it's not still a good record. It would be hard to imagine what they could do to sully it outside of like committing crime.
And like, I don't even know if they, I guess the contract whole thing like plays a big part, but it's still like, they clearly care still. Like, it's all still three members, the same people. Like, it's still a very cohesive unit that has stuck 100%. Around. So it's not, you have to like give them credit for that, even though some stuff like may come off really like corny, like Revelation Radio or whatever that second last album was, but it's still
one too. Like, it's, there's so many I forgot. Like, if you were like, how many albums has Green Day released since American Idiot, I wouldn't be close. I mean, like you said that, like when you said they released a triple album, I was like, I don't know. Okay, sure. Like, it's just, it's crazy. But yeah, I think like, so I saw them on the American Idiot tour. So that would have been like 04, 05. So, you know, we're talking now 15 years ago, but they were clearly having a very fun time. Like, it was an exceptional show. They clearly enjoyed what they were doing. And I think, you know, again, I haven't seen them in 15 years, but I think just from like seeing video and just like, you know, people tweeting about it and whatever, even the fact that they're touring with like Weezer and Fall Out Boy, like, it's clear that they still enjoy what they're doing. And they're also a band that will play the hits, which I think is underrated. Like, I think that to me shows, you know, that they still enjoy it, because I think it's like, it takes a certain degree of hating yourself or your own band to be the type of band that's like, we don't play our hits, or we, you know, we don't feel beholden to the fans, or, you know, like, And I think it's interesting, like Weezer was a band like that, you know, like Weezer went through a phase where they were very much like, we are not playing the hits. And now Weezer is like a Weezer cover band. It's like they're covering their own songs. Like, it's just insane. And it was just such, I remember, so when Make Believe came out, they hadn't toured in forever, because they did Green and Maladroit like right beside one another, and then they took like another like 3 or 4 year break before Make Believe. And so I remember they were like nervous to go back out on tour or whatever, so they did a small club tour when Make Believe first came out. So they played the Commodore Ballroom here in Vancouver, which is our best venue, and it's like 1200 cap. It's like the best place to see a band. So I had never seen Weezer before, and they were playing the Commodore, and I was just like, this is going to be the best night of my life. And they played 2 songs off of Blue, 1 song off of Pinkerton, and they played the entirety of Make Believe. Rivers did not move the whole show. He didn't move once. He just stood at the mic, strummed and played. It was like one of the worst shows I've ever seen. And I was like, man, why do bands like just start hating their fans? Like, what is this? You know? And then I remember a few years later, they called it the Weezer Hootenanny Tour, where they would get like 40 random musicians from whatever city they were in. And you could play any instrument. It's like, oh, do you play trombone? Do you play glockenspiel? Yeah. Whatever. You're going to come on stage with us and play these songs. And they had like trampolines on stage, and they shot each other with water guns, and they traded instruments, and they brought these people on stage for this Hootenanny. The set list was just like a greatest hit set list. And it was like, yes, this is why we come to see Weezer. It's like, just give the people what they want. And I think it's just, I want to know that you're still having fun doing the thing that you like presumably set out to do. And I think Green Day is still doing that, and I think it that also kind of helps keep their legacy intact in some
way. And like they do seem like very self-aware too. Like it's a very like it's so rare for a very like a long like they've been they released their first record in 1990. Like it's literally been 30 years of releasing albums, and they're still like very like, yeah, we'll just play what you want to hear kind of thing. And that's so rare, I feel like, in bands, and especially like the pop punk bands that really want to like embrace their new stuff too. But yeah, what can you do?
Yeah. And I mean, in some ways too, you have to respect that they like they've deviated from their sound, but not really. Like you can draw a straight line through all of it. It's not like Blink-182 or even Weezer where, you know, they've had these, and don't get me wrong, like Blink-182's self-titled is my favorite record of theirs, but, you know, you wouldn't listen to Dude Ranch and think that that band, like, 7 years later was going to make the self-titled record. Like, that just didn't seem possible. Whereas Green Day, for the most part, like I say, it's pretty easy to draw a straight line through all their stuff. Like, yeah, okay, American Idiot has, like, 9-minute songs on it or whatever, but they're still... they still sound ostensibly like a Green Day song, which I think, you know, I also have a lot of respect for that. They're just like, yeah, this is what we do well, and we're just going to keep doing it. And it sounds different enough. It's not like they've made the same record 15 times or whatever, but it's just, you know, you're like, yeah, okay, this, it makes sense that this is what they're doing and they're continuing to do it and they believe in what they're doing. And yeah, I think all of that is good. Yeah.
And speaking of good, well, maybe bad or whatever. that comes to conclusion of the show. Thank you so much, John, for coming on the pod.
And hey, spreading, my pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks for having
the
me.
Gospel of Dookie.
Anytime.
Plug away, honestly. I know you have loads to plug. So where can people find you and your stuff and everything?
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, this is a music podcast. Like I said, I do have a new metal review podcast. It's called the POD Cast. We spell cast with a K, like the band Korn. And yeah, we review a classic new metal album every month. So if you were into new metal, or even if you weren't, it's myself and Brian Quinby from Street Fight Radio, and it's a very good time, if I do say so myself. You can follow us at the POD_cast, and again, that's cast with a K. My main podcast is Blocked Party. That's a podcast that comes out every week. It's myself and Stefan Heck. We bring on a guest every week to talk about a time that they were blocked online. It's a fun time. Lots of people like it. That's at Blocked Party Pod. And you can just follow me on Twitter at Cullen the Comic. I'm a comedian. I've got some albums out. I tweet about that stuff. And also, I know you're, you know, you're, if you're a hockey fan, I do have a weekly radio show on Sportsnet 650 here in Vancouver called Hockey Fight. It also comes out as a podcast. It's myself and Brendan Batchelor, the radio voice of the Canucks. And we just break down the pressing things in hockey every week. We're on hiatus right now. We should be back in the fall, but if you're jonesing for some freezing cold takes from like February to August, you can check that out at Hockey Fight Pod.
Awesome. And you could find this podcast at big_shiny_goons. You can follow me at No Sour Attained on Twitter and rate, review, subscribe, like, follow, click all those links that you can. And yeah, once again, thanks so much to John for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Yeah. And yeah, throw on Dookie right now. You won't regret
immediately
it.
Immediately after.
Yes, exactly.